Welcome to Obesity, a Disease, the official Obesity Medicine Association podcast exploring the many facets of the disease of obesity. In this episode, OMA Chief Science Officer Dr. Harold Bays interviews Carly Burridge about how to start an obesity practice. Obesity, a Disease podcast is brought to you by the Obesity Medicine Association, the clinical leaders in obesity medicine.
Welcome. My name is Dr. Harold Bays, Medical Director and President of the Louisville Metabolic and Atherosclerosis Research Center, located in Louisville, Kentucky. I'm also the Chief Science Officer for the Obesity Medicine Association. Welcome to today's podcast. We're going to do something a little different here. We're going to talk about how to start an obesity medicine practice. And with us today, we have Carly Burridge. Carly, why don't you tell the folks who you are and what you do?
Sure. Well, first of all, thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to talk about this topic today because I think it's so important to really take providers to that next level of really implementing everything that they have learned about obesity medicine. So my name is Carly Burridge. I'm a PA and a fellow of the Obesity Medicine Association, and I've been treating obesity for over 8 years, and in that time, I've actually started a number of different obesity medicine programs in a variety of different healthcare settings. And I joined OMA in 2014, and since then, I've been on numerous committees, and for the past few years, I've had the honor and the privilege to be a co-author on the Obesity Algorithm. And I recently founded GainingHealth.com, which I created to support providers who want to start or optimize an obesity medicine program or clinic. And so I provide resources and coaching to help providers really figure out, you know, the how of obesity medicine. And, you know, like you, Dr. Bays, and so many of our obesity medicine colleagues, my passion is promoting obesity medicine and educating providers so that more people living with obesity can have access to evidence-based, compassionate treatment. And again, that's why I'm so excited to be here with you today. So thank you so much for having me.
Well, as we talked about before we, we got on the program here, I suspect this will be one of the more popular podcasts because I think there's so many clinicians out there right now that are wanting to get into obesity medicine, but they just don't even know where to start. And so one of the things that you helped out with as co-author of the Obesity Algorithm is now we have an entire section of the Obesity Algorithm that gives people an outline about exactly how to start an obesity medicine practice. I mean, it's a cookbook. It's a primer. It's a template for standard operating procedures. So I guess let's just get started here. People kind of anxious for us to get going to some of the substance here. Can you give us a sense when you're starting an obesity medicine practice? Can you give us sort of a summary of the practice components that a clinician should consider when starting an obesity medicine practice?
Yeah, so I think the first thing that people have to consider is to figure out their structure. How do they want to structure this? Are they going to have a separate obesity medicine program and add that to an existing practice? Are they going to try to integrate it into their current practice? Or do they want to develop a standalone obesity medicine practice? So that's one of the first things you need to think about is how do you want to structure it? And again, this can be fluid. So if you're starting out, maybe you're in primary care or OBGYN or a different specialty practice and you want to start incorporating obesity medicine, maybe, you know, initially you create a structure within your clinic. I would recommend making it kind of a separate entity so that you can really track revenue, track profit, loss, some of those costs. And then eventually you could always do a separate clinic. So it really depends on kind of where you're starting out, what your goals are, what your vision is, and the types of resources you have available to you. But first you have to decide what that structure is going to look like. And then the next important step is getting really clear on what your mission is. Who are you as a clinic, as a practice? What are the problems that you are trying to solve? And what values are important to you as a clinic? And then, you know, some of the other things that can be kind of tricky, like naming your program, right? Like, what is the name of your clinic going to be? And And how does that represent your values and your mission? And when it comes to naming your practice, you know, there's all kinds of legal stuff you have to think about too. You know, oftentimes you want to trademark that name. You need to make sure that that name is available. You're going to have to pick your website, right? And figure out what your domain is going to be. And is that domain available? So there's lots of things as far as naming that you need to be thinking about. And then you kind of need to figure out your corporate structure and your staffing. So, you know, will you have a medical director or program director? Are you going to have an office manager? And what kinds of clinical staff do you plan on having? Are you going to have physicians, nurse practitioners, physician assistants? And, you know, consider, do you want to have dietitians, exercise physiologists, or health coaches as part of your program? You know, what is that going to look like? What does that structure look like? You know, how many people will you need in your front office, in your back office? So you know, all of those things need to be considered and you need to create a structure for that. Now that structure can change, but creating a business plan where you're thinking about all of these things are very important when you're considering starting a practice.
Right. Now I got to tell you, some of the things you just said just sent cold shivers down my spine. We went through every one of those and you're right. Picking out the name, it sounds easy. But it's kind of not. I ended up paying an attorney to help me with potential trademark. I gave him my name, and we call our obesity side. We call it Your Body Goal, and we were, you know, I was trying to get a trademark and everything. He said, "Yeah, and it's not going to be any problems." And I'm like, great, you know, attorneys are expensive, and it turns out it wasn't great, and I was not able to get it trademarked. So it didn't matter. I could still use the name, but there's a lot of legalities to go into that. And then I guess the other thing I would say is I think your point about corporate structure is really important. Even if you don't have the corporate structure now, drawing it out on this, we give a template within the obesity algorithm, just filling in the blanks. And I think it helps you visualize where you are and maybe where you want to go. And as you said, it's all fluid, but I think it really helps out in guiding you to where you want to go. All right. So let's say that you've got the whole visionary stuff down. Okay. Mm-hmm. What you want to do. What are the practicalities to consider in just starting a business, just a business startup? You got somebody never really started a business before. What should they think about?
Yeah. So, I mean, like you mentioned, a lot of times it's worthwhile to hire a lawyer or an accountant, somebody to help you at least with that startup side of it. So that's something that you also need to consider into your budget is some of those costs as well. But, you know, you have to think about all of those startup costs. So the legal fees, but then also things like, you know, all of the equipment that you'll need. So you'll need office furniture, you'll need computers, printers, phones, faxes, you know, credit card processors. Again, you'll need a website, which, you know, nowadays they've made web building so user friendly that a lot of times if you have if you're a little bit tech savvy, you might be able to start your own website to start out with. And then as your practice builds, you can always, you know, change some of those responsibilities and hire somebody to do that. But you'll need medical supplies. You will need things, you know, consider if you want to have a body composition analysis. So, you know, all of those things and rent and an EMR system and internet and electricity and, you know, all of those are costs that you need to consider. So there's going to be startup costs and there are going to be ongoing costs. So you need to make sure that you're really looking at that. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt you. I thought you were finished there.
No, you're good.
Look, yet again, you're bringing back ghosts of the past for me. So within the context of our clinic, I'm a clinical trialist. And so we had already purchased the DEXA. And that's proven to be probably the thing that people most come to us for is for the purpose of getting a body composition. We have people driving 3 hours away to get body composition. But I think you have, don't you have other sorts of equipment like measuring resting metabolic rates and so in your practice? Don't you do that?
Yeah, you know, every program I've worked at has been a little bit different. You know, one of the first programs I had, they did have a body composition analysis machine, and that's when I really learned the value of that. It's very valuable from a provider standpoint in that it really shows you, you know, is your what is your patient losing or gaining? Are they losing muscle mass or are they losing fat mass? That's a really important distinction to know. And patients really love the printouts too. You know, they want to see how their fat mass is changing. And sometimes, you know, if their weight's up a little bit and they're freaking out about it and you look at it and say, oh, your water weight's up a little bit this time, right? So I think that's very valuable. So when I moved on to my next program, which was, so that was in a family medicine setting where we had a separate obesity program. And then my next setting, I was asked to set up the medical weight management program at a large hospital system in conjunction with their bariatric surgery program. And they didn't have a body composition analysis machine. And that was one of the first things I did was I drafted a proposal to get one because I saw the value in it. I saw the patients really appreciated it. And so it turns out that actually the marketing department had two body composition machines, but the bariatric surgery program didn't. So we ended up being able to get one actually from the marketing team. And then eventually we were able to buy a newer one for our own. So, you know, those machines can be very valuable, but you have to remember that insurance does not reimburse for body composition. So that's another thing that you have to take into account. And so how, you know, are you going to just eat that cost or are you going to have a cash-based part of your program for some of the things that aren't covered by insurance? You know, that's an option too. And then, yeah. And so in the program that I was just at, they have indirect calorimetry, so where you're able to see somebody's resting metabolic rate. And I think that can be really valuable too. And that can be reimbursed by insurance. So, you know, you have to consider all of these things. Do you want to incorporate this in your practice? If so, you know, how are you going to be reimbursed for these services?
Well, look, with the DEXAs that we do cash pay. And you had mentioned earlier about getting how to utilize credit cards and that stuff. So we got that all set up. But we charge like $120 for the first DEXA, and it gives a full body composition, and it gives bone mineral density and android fat and visceral fat. And then it's $90 for each follow-up one.
Right.
And people love them. You know, they like the first one. They like the second one even better, right?
Right.
So it's a... I can't think of any test that I've ever ordered as an endocrinologist that gives more wealth of information than a body composition analysis. I mean, it's just striking the amount of information that you can get from that. And the good news is people say, well, I mean, I don't even know how to interpret those things. Good news is this year, the revised obesity algorithm will give guidance as to percent body fat. And we'll give guidance to what's an appropriate android fat, what's appropriate visceral fat, these types of things. And Carly, I think you're the one that kind of really spearheaded and drove home the point of this concept of pre-obesity, right?
Right. Yeah. And that's important to measure too. You know, I mean, BMI, we know that BMI definitely has its limitations. And so again, body composition analysis gives you a much better idea of what that weight is. Is it muscle mass? Is it fat mass? Where is that fat mass distributed? Because it makes such a huge difference. And so, yeah. And again, muscle mass is so important too. And using this type of information can help drive our treatment. So if we see that a patient is losing a significant amount of muscle mass, you know, we can talk to them about their protein consumption. We can talk to them about physical activity. And I think that when you can tie things like labs or you know, a body composition analysis to behaviors like physical activity, like a nutrition plan, that means so much more to patients because they can actually see it. When they can see those numbers, that means something. You're not just talking in generalities. So I think all of those things are very important. And I do want to get back to what you said about, you know, the cash component, because there are things that we do in obesity medicine that may not be covered by insurance. And so, you know, even dietitians or exercise physiologists or, you know, educational classes, maybe you want to incorporate culinary medicine and do cooking demonstrations. You know, all of those types of things are generally not covered by insurance. So I think it's important to consider that as you're creating a program and to figure out how you will get reimbursed for that. And there's ways to do it, like you said, through, you know, either charging cash for certain specific services or having a program fee or a monthly fee. I would add too that make sure if you do take insurance, you want to make sure that insurance doesn't cover these services, because you can't charge cash for things that are covered by insurance. And if you have Medicare patients, that you have them sign an ABN if you're going to be charging for any cash services. Just a little tip there.
So have them do what now? For Medicare?
Sign an ABN.
Okay, do you want to tell folks what ABM is? Do you want to just...
It's basically a form that they sign that they are aware that they are being charged cash for this and that they are responsible for paying it. And it's something that they have to agree to. So you're basically, it's kind of like getting a consent that they understand that some of these services may not be covered by insurance, and that if they are not, that they will be responsible for paying for these services. Okay.
So what I'm hearing from you is, on the cost side, you need to figure out the things that you're going to need, the things you can do on your own, the things that you're going to have outside help. You mentioned website. I spent a ton of time learning various different softwares, and you're exactly right. I run our research sites website, and I run our weight management website. And it's just, I think it's a lot easier, because if you need to make a change, sometimes it costs a lot of money if you're having somebody else do it.
And
it does take a little time to get up to speed on how to do it. But once you have it, you can get really creative. And as you said, there's all kinds of templates that are out there that you can have really, really nice looking webs. Look, that's one of the things that drives me crazy. You get people that are running professional websites, and I look at them. I'm talking about big companies. I can't navigate through it. I can't find what I need. It's challenging. This is not a talk on website development or whatever, but then you also have to decide what sort of procedures you're going to do. And as you mentioned, nutritional counseling or physical activity counseling, or even things like blood work. We talked about the, body composition and that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. As you're implementing all of these things, you got to have a guidance for your staff. You got to have a guidance for yourself. What sort of standard operating procedures would you recommend that somebody that's going to start an obesity medicine practice, what should they develop that again sort of codifies exactly how they're going to run their practice?
Yeah, I think it's really important that you think about, who your staff is and what everybody's responsibilities are and what kind of services you're going to offer and who does those, who offers those services. And so I think it's important to have that structure. You have to think about, how often are patients going to follow up, right? Are you going to have them come weekly? Are you going to have them come monthly? Are you going to have group visits? Are you going to have individual visits? Are you going to offer telemedicine or do remote patient monitoring? So there's lots of different ways that you can structure these programs, and you really have to think about all of that and create a good structure. And then for each person that you have at your office, for every staff member, you need to make sure that you know what everybody's responsibilities are. And you need to outline it. And I would recommend kind of writing a training guide for each position, so that you know exactly what the responsibilities are for each member. So that when if you lose a staff member, somebody leaves, or if you have to hire somebody new on, that you have a structure in place to train them, right? That you're not starting from scratch, that you have some really good guidance for who does what. So I think, creating that structure from the very beginning, and again, it can be fluid, but it's really important that you have all of that in mind. You need to think about, how long are your visits going to be? How long is your new visit, your new patient appointments? How long are your follow-up appointments going to be? And do you have some kind of a structure? I really recommend having, a very thorough new patient intake form and follow-up forms available that patients fill out ahead of time, because that will save you so much time, without trying to figure all of that information out and gathering all of that information in the visit, if your patient has the opportunity to think about it and fill it out ahead of time. So, all of those forms you have to have in place. And OMA does have a really nice forms bundle that you can purchase through the bookstore. And so that can be very helpful. And you can customize that to your own clinic. So you need to make sure that you have all of those forms in place and who's responsible for entering, you know, some of this information into the EMR system. And does your EMR system have a template that's easy to use? Because if you don't, you'll spend a lot of your time documenting. And so if you can create a template ahead of time, that will really save you a lot of time having to enter a lot of that data, because you want to spend your time with your patient. You don't want to spend all of your time documenting.
Right.
So those are some things that you need to think about.
Right. I know it takes a lot of time. I invested that time myself in the EMR and setting up the templates. But as you mentioned, you got to have it. And then, I mean, we're not going to have time to go through all this stuff, but in the obesity algorithm, as far as all sorts of standard operating procedures, there's office policies and employee policies and, you know, professional contract agreements. And even things like, you know, racial discrimination and sexual harassment policies. You got to have a lot of these policies in place if you're going to be running any kind of a business, small business, which is what we're talking about. And those are listed. I can't say that we got all of them, but I think we got a lot of them. And then you got to have, as you mentioned, appropriate training for the office staff, standard operating procedures. How do you measure a waist circumference? You got to have policies for that. Even things like, how do you take a blood pressure?
Right.
And then you have to think about, you know, office brochures and you know, food journals. And I think all those forms and documents that you mentioned and of course, training records, all these things are list. I'm not just going to, you know, sit here and list them all, because they're all going to be, you can find those in the obesity algorithm. And again, we're not trying to pretend that this is an all-inclusive list, but I think it's a good start. So what I'd like to finish up with is this. One of the things also that we're introducing, I mean, it's not new to most folks by now, is this whole concept of, you know, how adaptation of telehealth to obesity management. And I think most people in obesity medicine are kind of already doing that. But we have this sort of acronym that we call it ADAPT. And ADAPT stands for Assessment, Diagnosis, Advice and Education, Prognosis and Treatment. And as we talk about it through the obesity algorithm, can you go through, you know, each of those components and how do we translate this ADAPT telehealth approach to obesity medicine? Let's just start with assessment. How on earth can you assess a patient by video? How do you do that? What can you do?
Yeah. So it's, you know, honestly, a lot of it is similar to what you would do in person. So telehealth can be something that can be very intimidating for a lot of providers if they've never done it. But really, it's not all that different from what you would do in person. One of the things that is definitely different is you still need to be able to collect vitals. Right. And that's one of the challenges when you have your patient, you know, at their own home. So there's several different ways that you can do that. You know, if your patient has, I tell them, if you want to do telemedicine, there's a couple things you need. You need a scale, you need a blood pressure cuff, and you need to have a way to be able to measure your pulse, especially if, you know, if they're on medications for blood pressure, or they're on anti-obesity medications that could affect blood pressure or pulse. So this is something that we really need. And so sometimes they can get their own equipment and then just self-report that to you. Another way to do it, ideally, is if they now have like Bluetooth or 4G equipment, scales and blood pressure cuffs and things like that, that will actually send you all of that information electronically. So if that's available, that's fantastic. You can use remote patient monitoring and get reimbursed for that. But if not, sometimes even if the patient just has some of that equipment at home, they can give you that information. And then as far as taking the history, you know, it's pretty similar as what you would do in person. You know, you want to evaluate their weight pattern, their weight change since last visit. I always calculate their percent total body weight loss from the beginning of the program. You want to review medications, any potential side effects. Of course, we want to assess for concurrent illnesses. So if they have hypertension or diabetes, you want to make sure that you're assessing that and make sure that they're checking that at home in case there need to be any medication adjustments or, you know, anything like that. So then you can evaluate, you know, depending on how much time you have, maybe you pick one of the elements to talk about. So maybe you focus on nutrition or activity or their sleep history. A lot of times I like to ask the patient what they would like to talk about, because you know, you do have a limited amount of time, and obesity medicine is complex. There are a lot of components that we want to talk about, but you can't address every single one of those at every visit. So sometimes just asking your patient, you know, I like to ask, well, tell me what went well in the past month, right? I like to build their confidence, because oftentimes they'll want to just start with, oh, you know, I went to a party and I ate a piece of pizza. It's like, okay, that's fine. But what went well this month? Let's focus on that first. And then we can talk about, you know, what are some of the things that maybe we want to work on over the next month? Or what are some questions you have? So, you know, you can do all of that as part of the assessment. Of course, you want to do a review of systems and then a physical exam. There's actually quite a bit of physical exam that you can do via telemedicine, you know, especially if it's video. You know, you can do a general exam. You can see, are they having any acute distress? You know, how are they doing? You can do a pretty good cognitive exam. You can, you know, check their cranial nerves, you know, when they're talking to you. You can check their mood, even their respiration. Do they have labored respiration? You know, things like that. You can assess their eyes, their speech, their tone. So there's quite a bit that you can do. And if you see them walking around, if you are concerned about gait or movement, you can assess that via video. So there's quite a bit that you can do as far as physical exam via telemedicine.
All right. So that's the assessment part. Mm-hmm. So that's the A of ADAPT. We got four more to go here. What about diagnosis? How can you diagnose with telehealth?
Well, you know, I mean, similar to what you would do in person, if you have their weight and their BMI, we can diagnose obesity. If you know their medical history, you have their other diagnoses that they already have. So the diagnosis really isn't that much different, I think, than when you are seeing.
What about like things like coding? I guess that's what I was meaning. How do you code for a telehealth as opposed to if you saw the patient in the office?
Yeah, so there are specific codes for telehealth. So you want to make sure you add the telemedicine modifier. I believe it's a GT code. And again, I think we have all of this information in the algorithm as well with telemedicine, how you do that coding. So you just want to make sure that you have that telemedicine code on there. And then also make sure that you have consent for telemedicine visits, and make sure you document that consent. That's very important that they
understand. Because not everybody's going to want to do telehealth, right?
Right. Not everyone's going to want to do
telehealth. I prefer it, but some no.
Right. Right. And if the patient chooses that they don't want to do that, then of course we have to respect that. And, you know, hopefully we have an option to see them in person. But I will say, you know, from starting when this pandemic started, I switched to telemedicine from one day to the next, 100% virtual. And I have to say, there was a lot of benefits to it. The patients really seemed to enjoy it. They didn't have to leave work. They didn't have to travel to come see you. So it was much more efficient for them. I noticed our no-show rates really dropped because people aren't trying to, you know, drive it through traffic or have last minute things come up. So patients actually really seem to enjoy it. And so I would say it can be a very effective way to incorporate obesity medicine using telemedicine, especially since we do ask them to follow up as frequently as we do. It can be hard for some people.
Okay. So, you know, we talk again, it's ADAPT, that's the acronym. We talked about mm-hmm. advice and, we talked about, diagnosis. As far as the advice is concerned, I mean, I think you've already covered that. There's nutritional counseling and physical activity. We have in the algorithm all sorts of acronyms like FIT and mm-hmm. and as far as motivational interviewing, ORS and SMART and all the things. These are things that we typically do anyway. And as far as prognosis, I think you've correctly stated that that's just not a whole lot different than a regular office visit when you're doing it by telehealth. But how about ADAP, PT, what about treatment though? How is treatment different when you're doing it through telehealth as opposed to treatment when you're doing it in the office? Are there differences there?
You know, in my experience, there really wasn't that much difference. You know, you're talking to them about, you know, nutritional therapy. So you're setting very specific nutrition goals, right, that you have agreed upon with the patient. Again, this is motivational interviewing. You are partnering with your patient. you're collaborating and using shared decision making. And then you set, you know, you want to summarize, right? That's part of motivational interviewing too. So at the end of the visit, you want to summarize, okay, these are some of the goals that that we're setting together for you to work on, you know, between now and your next visit. So maybe you have a very specific nutrition goal. Let's, you know, try to reduce whatever it is, eating out to once a week. That's a very specific goal. For your activity, maybe you set a very specific goal, you know, to try to walk for 10 minutes during your lunch break, you know, every day or whatever those goals are. So that's part of your treatment. And then you can also prescribe using telemedicine, prescribe anti-obesity medications. You know, for some medication, of course, you need to know your state laws when it comes to prescribing. Some of them do require an in-person visit first before you can prescribe certain.
And we're mainly talking about controlled substances, right?
Right. So you need to make sure you know the laws around that. But, you know, in general, you can still prescribe. As long as you're within those laws, any anti-obesity medications, you can refer to bariatric surgery using telemedicine. So you can do, I think a lot of the treatment plan is similar in telemedicine as it is in in-person visits. So I would encourage patients, people, providers, not to be afraid of telemedicine, to embrace it and to just start doing it. And you'll learn along the way.
Well, look, you know, when you're talking about starting an obesity practice, I think telehealth's got to be in there. It's got to be a big time component. But I will agree, I want to make sure that we're, you know, clear on something you said there. State and federal laws, it's mm-hmm. different across the country, particularly when it comes to controlled substances and particularly with regard to telehealth. And particularly the laws today might be different laws tomorrow. So I think people need to be, you know, really up to speed on those things. But to the extent that you can be compliant with state and federal and local laws and such, you know, even with controlled substances and weight management therapeutics and such, you know, it can all work. It can all work. So Carly, thank you so much. This has been great. I mean, I know it's just an extraordinary amount of information, but again, for people that some of this kind of just flew right by them, we have it all written down. It's in the obesity algorithm. If you're a member of the Obesity Medicine Association, you get it. How much does it cost, Carly? How much does the ebook cost, this 1,000-page ebook? How much does it cost?
It's free for members. And I mean, it is just such a great resource. So I really hope everybody takes advantage of it and share it with your colleagues. Like, get it out there. This is such a great resource. And Dr. Bays, I have to thank you. I know you spend so much of your time and energy on the algorithm. So I really want to thank you for everything that you do to create this incredible resource for all of our
providers. Well, look, whatever work I do, it's to implement the outstanding recommendations that you and other authors make. So I want to thank you for that. Okay, well, this has been fabulous. This has been Carly Burridge. Thank you, Carly. Thank you very much. And my name is Dr. Harold Bays, and you've been listening to a podcast from the Obesity Medicine Association. And this one was entitled, How to Start an Obesity Medicine Practice. I hope you got something out of it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Bays and Ms. Burridge. For more information about obesity medicine podcasts and other resources from the clinical leaders in obesity medicine, please visit www.obesitymedicine.org/podcasts. Loved the episode of Obesity, a Disease? Head over to iTunes to subscribe, rate, and leave a review. The views expressed in this podcast episode are those of the show hosts and do not necessarily represent the opinions, beliefs, or policies of the Obesity Medicine Association or its members. Please check back in soon for another episode of Obesity, a Disease.